and welcome back to Uneducated, the show where we feel dumb so you don't have to. I'm your host, Cami Scott, and yeah, welcome to another episode. What do I normally say there? Why did that just feel so awkward? And my mic is falling over. Hold on, y'all. Struggling today. I just got off of a little group hang. I was in the group chat on our Geneva app. I never know how to like explain all that. I'm like, our group chat. And then people are like, where is this group chat? The link is always in the show notes and on my socials and on the Uneducated socials. I'm sorry. I just ate lunch and I cannot stop burping and I'm trying to hold them back and I need to just let them out a second. Anyways, come join the group chat. It is so much fun. Today was really cool. I feel like it's always like a little awkward starting the group chat because the platform's amazing, but the thing that I'm using allows everyone to speak, and it's like those awkward moments on a call where you like don't want to talk over someone, but you don't want to leave too much lag time. So we're all trying to navigate that in the beginning of these calls, and then eventually it all flows and we're all like chatting at the same time, and it's really cute. But I asked everyone where they were calling in from today, and it is just so exciting to hear where everyone's from and like hear how diverse this little community that we've created is. It's really special and really interesting, and I think it just creates really interesting perspectives, and it's so fun. I just love it. I am getting so much joy from this podcast, and then on top of that, the group chat has just been so fun. Like, people talk about everything from serious stuff to silly stuff. I'm going to pull up the chat right now. People were talking about episodes of the show. Hold on. In the episode chat. Obviously, they're talking about that. We were trying to coordinate a time to chat. And then people are like getting advice on what phone to get. People are talking about coming out for a National Coming Out Day. People are talking about ADHD because I talked about it in a YouTube video and then, well, on the podcast now, but I hadn't yet. And it's just so fun to have these like open discussions in a more like personal way than just on social media. I know I like rave about this group chat all the time, but it is. It's worth it. It's so fun. We have a really fun episode today. I learned so much and I felt such a sense of calm during this episode. So Carrie Barber is incredible. She is such a fucking boss. She's been a creative director for so many incredible brands like Sephora and Glossier. She's amazing. And more recently, her and her business partner have purchased Make Beauty. So we just talk about the trajectory of her career and how she got to where she is and what she wants to do with Make and how she's kind of like fitting a beauty brand into a sustainable world. It's just so interesting. And I think she has so many qualities of a leader and of a founder of a company who is like, I just feel like a lot of people lack these skills. She's so transparent. She's so self-aware. We talk a lot about like the things we don't know and accepting that we don't know them and focusing on what we're good at and listening to other people. And I think a lot of times people in leadership feel this need to like know it all and be the best person, and everyone else is just kind of like not as good at them but doing everything else because they don't have time to do it all themselves. And she's just so like community driven and collaborative driven, and yeah, I don't know, there's something so soothing about hearing her talk about what she doesn't know instead of focusing on like, I'm great at this and I do all that. It's like, no, you know what, I think one of my best skills is that I know what I don't know and I know how to ask for help. And I just think it's really powerful. I think she has a lot of great advice in this for people and finding their success and finding their thing in life. And it's a lot of unique things that I feel like we don't hear all the time. So There is a ton of information in this. It's, you're going to want to digest it. You might want to listen to it a couple times. She has an incredible story. So I'm actually going to jump right into this. Let's not waste time on my blabber. So enjoy Carrie Barber. I'm so excited to talk to you. Like I said before I started recording, you are very fun to research online. So I highly recommend, but I also find it shocking that you haven't Googled yourself ever. I'm calling bullshit.
I think that I've done that like maybe before a big job interview or like, yeah. You know, when I was in art school, I did some like questionable photos and I've always gone back to see if they're still there. But otherwise, like, I don't know, for a while, there just wasn't anything like worth looking up. I would always just see like what would come up though, so that yeah. I would know, and someone wouldn't be like, okay, so I saw your nipples on Google. I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that nothing noteworthy came up. You have quite the impressive resume.
Thanks. I think that for the most part, unless maybe you were in beauty or like, you know, it's such a small sort of group of, it's a small world, small group of people mm-hmm. on Instagram and in beauty, like unless you were in that sort of mix, it's, you maybe wouldn't know who I was. Mm-hmm. Because I also like kept things pretty, you know, low key and sort of very controlled and pulled back until mm-hmm. make, obviously. And then I was kind of like, all right, well, this is my job now. So here I am. And everyone's like, wow.
You seem like a generally private person and a keep to yourself yeah. kind of person. So it must yeah. have been kind of a big shock to jump into make beauty and kind of having to be on the forefront of everything and really get your face out there too.
Yeah, it was, I think one thing we did that I wasn't really thinking about at the time, but in hindsight, when we were filming How to Make It, I had no other choice but to be really open and get used to people. Like, I had the luxury of my best friend sort of producing and directing that, which made mm-hmm. it so easy for me to just be, you know, myself. But that sort of like helped me practice. And yeah. then making silly videos on Instagram also helped, because I'm like exactly. a really silly girl, and I like don't, I'm so shy that being silly helps me sort of like break out of my shell. Mm-hmm. And then when you're like in your bathroom recording videos on your phone talking to yourself, like there's nothing sillier than that. It's just like,
that's how I kind of got more comfortable in front of a camera. I'm not comfortable at all, which I always say is like the dumbest thing, because it's such a big part of my job. But yeah. I always thought I was going to be a behind the scenes kind of person. But mm-hmm. I think sitting and talking to your phone and creating a community, it like, I don't know. I think that that really makes you feel more comfortable being in front of a camera, yeah. being in front of people, because I don't know, you just, it's a weird, intimate way to get to know yourself.
Yeah. And you have no other choice but to be exactly who you are, because otherwise people call bullshit and it's not interesting, mm-hmm. you know? And I think I sort of ran into this a lot at work. And even when I was starting Make and my business partner was like, you gotta be more, you know, this shy girl from Colorado, silly, you know, like sweet girl, because nobody really, that's not the perception of you. And I'm like, ugh. You know, and like the only feedback I ever got at work was like, you need to smile more. And I'm like, how dare you?
No, I don't want to.
I'm at work, you know, and like when I'm really focused on something, I have like a mean face and I can't help that. I'm focused.
I think it makes you really interesting, because a lot of your content and vision, it can be really edgy and moody and kind of darker mm-hmm. and really cool. And then I like that juxtaposition of you being so into that aesthetic, but then also being like the sweet, shy, goofy girl. I think it's like, I think that's perfect. I like that combination. Don't smile more. You're fine. So I want to do a little rundown of how you got to where you are. I think it's really inspiring. Okay. And I think a big problem with jobs and just the world right now is that we don't realize all the things that are possible and what opportunities are, especially for women. But before yeah. we get into that, we have to do a little trivia question that we okay. do every episode. Okay. So today's question is, which U.S. state has the most lakes?
Michigan.
Oh, that makes sense. I was going to go Minnesota. Don't they have like a tagline about lakes?
Well, I thought or Michigan.
Am I missing up? Oh, no.
They're really close.
I might
close,
be missing
though,
up my M's.
Yeah, close to each other.
All right. Well, I'll say with Minnesota, you get Michigan, which I feel like you're going to be correct. Let's see what the answer is. Oh. It's Alaska. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
I always forget about poor little Alaska up there.
I know.
Or big Alaska. Dang it.
Wow, I would have never guessed that.
No, I would have done like a lot of northern states first before I got over to Alaska.
Same, something close to Canada.
Yeah, so I've been rough with those trivia questions lately. I need to like step it up over here. And then also something that I ask every guest, which I think is really interesting with being uneducated and trying to educate yourself, and the whole theme of the podcast comes changing our minds and growing and realizing that things we believed may not be what we believe now. Is there anything in the past year or so that you've changed your mind on? It doesn't have to be big or profound, just anything that's kind of changed a bit for you.
I was thinking about this a lot last night when you sent the questions over, and I even asked my boyfriend, I was like, what have I changed my mind about? And his answers were completely useless, but
God, now I want to know what his answers were.
His was something about like, something related to my apartment, which I just didn't, I was like, what are you talking about? And I don't really know, because I think why this question is hard for me right now is because I'm in this time where I'm trying not to like assign what I think to anything. Oh. And what I mean by that is like when I started with Make, I didn't want to like limit myself in any way. And I was having a really hard time keeping up with everything that I had to do. And I felt like what I thought it was going to be is not what it is at all. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, have this team of people who have more experience than I do. And I just wanted to be like, I'm in a place of learning. And so I'm just going to say yes to everything and try not to make any sort of assumptions or judgments about what it is that I'm doing. And I also think I'm going through this huge period of growth right now where who I thought that I was or what I want to be isn't maybe necessarily lining up to like actually who I am or what works for me and like what serves me. I did think of something, but I don't remember what it is right now.
I think that is the perfect answer. And I think it's so powerful that you're kind of stripping back what you already knew and what your perceptions were, even of yourself. And I think that's a really interesting and courageous point to take as a leader. You own a company, you are a lot of people. It's like, oh no, I have to know all of the answers and tell everyone else. And I think that that's such a more powerful way to run a group of people and saying, you know more than me at this. This is why you're hired for this job. My job is to hear your thoughts and to implement them. And I think that that's a really incredible talent that when people get in places of leadership, they forget and they want to kind of just control everything.
Yeah. I found that there, maybe this was my experience of being close to founders of, you know, very popular companies, that I had this perception that they knew everything and they, you know, like they exuded this sort of leadership and power, which is needed for sure. Mm-hmm. But and then when I started, I felt this pressure to like know everything and do all of the things, which is impossible. It's just not. I know a little bit about everything, but it's not my job to do all of those things. It's my job to know about it. And I try to really think about, like, again, I just try to say yes to as much as I can. And I try to remind myself, like, why these things have aligned for me, like why my partner Ben wanted to take on Make with me, the thing that I bring to that, and how I am like a piece that fits into this whole puzzle that makes mm-hmm. make work. And then my job is to represent what it is that we do to everybody else, you know, and to be the one who communicates what we're doing and you basically be the voice for the brand, you know. And I think in order to do that, I really had to be open. And, you know, I'm a perfectionist and I work is the thing that I've always been like really good at. And, you know, I'm like not that great at it right now because I just don't know what I'm doing. And it's fine, you know, but it really took a lot of me being like, I trust the people I work with. They know that this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to trust that this is where I'm supposed to be and really do my best to ask questions and try not to know everything because I would just, it's exhausting to do that. Yeah. So,
yeah. And that's yeah. a vulnerable state to be in and to accept and to own up to, which yeah. is just so powerful. It kind of feels like a metaphor for a lot of life. I think we see the adults that way or yeah. parents that way. Like I'm sure when you were working closely with other founders, they did appear like they just had it all together and knew all the answers and they didn't. And I think yeah. that puts pressure on us as just humans in general, that we think there's these milestones where we're supposed to have it together or know the answers. And I mean, I just turned 30 this year and I can definitely say that I don't have it together like I thought 30-year-olds did when I was 15 or 20 or 25. I was like, that's the age where you just have everything together and you know everything, but you don't. And I think
you don't.
If anything, you just learn that you don't know things and that that's okay. And that it's more powerful to ask and question and lean on other people than try to have it all together.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important to know what you're not good at also, because there's just things you're not good at. It's that's so hard for me to say, because I really think like, try me. It's just like not the reality, you know? And I've learned a lot about the ways in which I work. And I thought that, you know, again, I thought that I worked one way, but I actually worked this other way. And I just was coming up against so much resistance and trying to like fit into this like mold or this like, mm-hmm. this is how people are supposed to work. And it's like, I could do 4 hours at a time and then I need a break, and I could get a lot done in 4 hours, but I can't do like 12 hour stretches. And I've recently like tried to structure my day a little different because of that. And honestly, I'm so much happier and I get so much more done. I have more energy and it's like, no, it didn't affect anybody else but me. So it's like, just, I think it's hard and it's always a work in progress. And I think as you get older, you care less about what people think, which is great. Oh, like <yeah. laughs> I've noticed that in my 30s. I was like, oh, I was so happy to turn 30. I was like,
me too.
My 20s are like, over.
Goodbye, scary 20s of like yeah. literally knowing nothing and being scared of everything.
So yeah, I think it's about being like, I'm good at that. I'm going to focus what I'm really good at and I'm going to, ask other people to help me with this, or just know that that's something that needs more attention like that.
Yeah.
Not
how do you feel about the concept of fake it till you make it? Cause from what I'm hearing from you, it's instead of fake it till you make it, it's figure out what you're good at, focus on that, and don't worry about the stuff you don't know. Like don't yeah. fake knowing that. Do you see any truth in that statement?
I think yes, in two ways. Yes, because I did that when I was really young. I sort of, you know, fudged my actual experience level so that I could get better jobs at better places. And, you know, ultimately worked out for me, but I was the only one who suffered because it was really obvious to other people that I didn't have the experience I said I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't regret that at all. And I think a lot of people do that because, you know, you can grow into a job pretty easily if you show up and you ask questions and you just do the work. So in the beginning, I definitely faked it, like actually kind of faked it. And then I think that there's this sort of this shift on your mentality where I think about this a lot because athletes do this, where they envision themselves winning something mm-hmm. and they, in their mind, they've already won it. And then their whole body aligns with that. And I feel like in a way that's sort of faking it, but you're just really like aligning your energy to get to this place that you want to get to. So I do think, you know, like, yes, that applies, but you also have to like show up and do the work, you know, and yeah. a lot of times, even now, I feel like imposter syndrome big time because, you know, I'm just not used to this role that I'm in. And, you know, I acquired Make and completely redid it. So it's basically a new brand, you know, but I don't necessarily feel like I'm a founder, which I'm fine with. You know, that was never really something I thought I was going to do anyway. But it happened so quickly going from freelance art director, you know, having a lot of control, being super good at one thing, to then owning a business and knowing probably 10% of it, and then just like constantly being like, what?
Yeah, that's a really big jump. But you did have such massive roles at so many big brands. So yeah, I guess this is a perfect time to kind of take it back.
Yeah.
How did you get into being an art director and working with Sephora and Glossier and Violet Grey? Like, those are massive companies. And I think a lot of people would love a job like that. So even if you can just give like tips of that path and how you fell into it.
So when I was graduating from high school, I thought I was going to be an athlete. And then I decided like April of my senior year that I didn't want to do that. I got really tired of it and I wasn't enjoying it anymore. And Project Runway happened to be on and I was really into that. And I was like, you know what? That sounds interesting. I'm going to try that. And I knew that I wanted to, like, the best way to describe it is create worlds, but there's no like college degree for that. It's, you know, fashion design, graphic design, filmmaking, photography. And I was kind of like, all those things. I want to do all of that. And so I didn't know what an art director was. I didn't know that that was a job. And really until I was in my third year of college and my third college, I found an advertising program that had art direction as a degree. And I was like, okay, like that, you know, my dad was like, you have to graduate. I don't care what you do, but this is where you're graduating. Yeah.
What were you studying previously those first 3 years of college?
I did fashion design at FITM, which I quickly realized I didn't want to do that. I tried to make it into like fashion merchandising, but I wasn't really interested in fashion.
Like, I think that's what so many people do. My first year of college, I did fashion at Kent State because same vibe. I think if I knew what art directing was, maybe I would have gone that path because I was so interested in like conceptualizing things and bringing things together. But like you said, there was only like fashion merchandising or fashion design, and that didn't really make sense. And I think that makes people, especially when college is so focused on your specific thing, it makes people lose interest. I wish college was more broad than it is, or like we encourage people to go for 2 years and have no direction, because most people change their major like 15 times.
And I did too. I was really trying to find something to make work, but nothing really fit until I got to Academy of Art, which is where I graduated. Mm-hmm. And I had went to San Francisco, moved down to LA to go to Otis, which is like a fine art school. And I had done fine art, like sculpture and painting and all of that. And I thought maybe this was around the time when Show Studio was starting to make fashion film. And I was like, oh, maybe I want to be like a visual artist or something. Maybe I want to be like an experimental artist. Like, maybe that's what this is. It wasn't. And, you know, then my dad's like, you gotta graduate college. So pick something. And the timing of everything, I went back up to San Francisco, went to the Academy of Art, which is sort of like, I think a hybrid of a trade school-ish and an art college. Like it's a very big art school, and you know, a lot of people get accepted, and I was just kind of like, whatever, my friends live here, I'm just gonna do college and I'll figure it out. But at the time, for advertising, they were flying up these teachers every week from Art Center in LA, so I had basically Art Center teachers, and I had this like infamous graphic design teacher who was crazy but brilliant. I had a film teacher who worked for like Skywalker and Lucas, and you know, was one of the first people to do CGI, and he was brilliant. And you know, so I sort of went back up there and I was like, I'll do this. I don't want to do any copywriting. I'm not interested in strategy, but I'll do graphic design and film. So ultimately I was able to get everything that I wanted. And when I graduated, I was so obsessed with show studio and fashion filmmaking. I was like, that's the thing I'm going to do. Because to me, it feels like, again, you create a whole world. And, you know, film was so interesting at that time. And I was living in San Francisco, and my boyfriend at the time worked at Sephora, and he was like, they need production designers. Like, you know, why don't you just work there until, you know, just to get some cash. And I was like, cool. Sephora is the coolest thing in San Francisco. So I'll do that. And then once I started, I just never stopped. I went to Sephora at a time where they were really trying to be more fashion. Mm-hmm. There was this really great creative director there. Her name was Lena, and she just made it so cool. And I was like, there's no better place than Sephora. And at the time, Into the Glass had just started and Violet Grey had just launched. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting at Sephora. I would get there early and I would sit there, and, you know, Emily used to post herself like once or twice a week, and then it started to be every day, and then it turned into, you know, what it ended up being. And I would sit there, I would read Into the Glass, I would look at Violet Grey, you know, and then I would try to like bring all of that into Sephora. And like, I just was so, I couldn't believe that I was like working on what I was working on, even though I was doing like banner ads and, you know, like the lowest of the low. But I was just in that environment, and it was so interesting. And to be able to work at Sephora at that time too, when they were really focused on e-commerce, this is like 2011, I think, at this point, you know, and starting to do a mobile app, which, you know, at that time, no one was really doing that. So it was just really interesting. And then I was so obsessed with Into the Glass that I was like, I've got to find a way. Like, I'm not a writer, I'm not a photographer, but I have to find a way to get to New York and I'll work for Emily. I'll just find a way. I tried to bring Into the Glass into Sephora, where, you know, you could like, you know, see Liv Tyler suggested this mascara and see that in store, but that, you know, legally wouldn't work now that I know that. But, you know, I was like thinking in that way.
Yeah. You had like a one track mind of like, this is what I'm meant to be doing, and I'm going to find a way to do it.
Yeah. And you know, I got to find a way to get to New York. And I moved to New York, you know, worked at Bloomingdale's for a little while as their art director. And then a small agency that happened to be across the street from Glossier on Lafayette. And I remember when they launched, and I like was seeing everyone run around with Glossier bags, like hand delivering products. Like, I remember that day, and I was like, oh, they're right here. You know, and at that point, that was when I was like, that's my in, like, that's how I will work with Emily, because I just really looked up to her a lot. And then my dad died around that time, and I left New York for a little while, and I wasn't focused on work at all.
Yeah.
And then I had gotten an email from the creative director at Glossier. Her name's Helen, and her and I had one coffee like years ago, and she emails me, and she's like, I just started working with Glossier. You know, we need an art director. Would you be interested? And I wrote back, there's no one more interested than me. Like, let me know.
What do you think made you stand out in that one coffee meeting from years before that she called you up?
Honestly, I don't know. I think I felt really comfortable with her, so I was able to be myself. I am a terrible interviewer for jobs, because I don't want to be like, I'm great at this thing and here's all my work and blah, blah. You know, I'm just like, you like me or you don't. It's not a good way to do interviews. But she's also British, and so we just like kind of, my mom's family is British, so we's just connected. Mm-hmm. And I think at that time, you know, there maybe weren't a lot of people who were digital art directors in beauty, because that was such a new thing, like working on digital.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we had stayed in touch, and probably like the Sephora experience and then the Bloomingdale's experience, you know, she was just like, oh, she's worked in beauty and she's across the street.
Perfect. it was all fate.
Yeah. That sort of goes back to this idea of like manifesting the things that you want, because I didn't know how, but I was like, I will work for Emily Weiss in some way, you know, and I, Glossier wasn't a thing at that time. And I just, you know, I was like, there's gotta be a way.
Mm-hmm. And I really that's like how your path is more about, instead of like 100% knowing what you want, or I hate the concept of follow your passion, because I think it's really scary for people because people don't know what their passions are. And you sound like the definition of following your curiosity instead, which I think is so much more powerful. Like, you went to college because you're like, that's what I'm going to do because I'm not passionate about sports now. And then when you weren't passionate or you weren't curious about something, you went, I'm going to go over here, or I'm going to make this work. And then you just kept chasing that curiosity. And I think that's what led you to being so extremely passionate about what you do.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I also have a really short attention span. And so I move on from things really quickly. Like I've had all the jobs that I've had for like a year and a half to 2 years, which a lot of people are like, what, why are you moving so quickly? And I'm like, because I did the thing that I wanted to do and now I'm ready to do something else. And I just wanted to move on so quickly. And it, that's just like, you know, the kind of person that I am, and I accept it to be that way, you know, but that was definitely, you know, I was like, I want to try this. I'm going to try it. If it doesn't work, that's okay. Like I always, my mom was kind of like, you don't know until you try. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try that. You know? And I just, I was fortunate enough to maybe naive to be like, it's all going to work out.
I think you know? Everyone needs the perfect amount of optimism and being a little naive to make things work. If we weren't a little naive, we probably wouldn't try a lot of the things that we do and make it work.
Right. That's something I really appreciate about being young. I think it's just that, like, I don't know. There's, I think as you get older, for me at least, there's like things matter more now. Mm-hmm. So I'm more cautious and I'm more careful and I'm not as impulsive because there's just a lot more happening that means a lot. And when I was in my 20s, I was so like, whatever. I moved to New York in 1 week. I had like no plan. I would never do that now, you know, and I moved back to San Francisco. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I moved so much so quickly and I would do things really fast and, you know, it, it worked for me then. And I think that, you know, again, the curiosity and the sort of like, just the like angst to keep on going and see how far I could get was really what got me as far as quickly as I did, for sure.
Yeah. So did you always have kind of a goal or even just a curiosity of owning a company or having a bigger role? You worked with so many founders very closely. Did you see that and want that position for yourself? How did you get to taking over Make?
I think I, when I was thinking about sort of the end goal, it was like either I'm a creative director at a really big company and that's a way in which I have some recognition and some impact, or I do my own thing. And I, before I started Make, you know, I was sort of at the end of the things I had. I was like, okay, I did all the things I wanted to do. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do next. And a lot of people were like, well, why don't you start your own thing? And I'm like, I don't know. Like I just, there was just something that I felt like, yes, I would do that if something really felt like I had to do it. And, you know, I didn't really have a lot of chance to even think about that before Make came along, because there was probably a few months in between my, when I stopped freelancing and when I worked on Make full time. But I remember, you know, my business partner, Ben, was like, Make's for sale and I want to buy it, but only if you want to do it with me. And I remember sort of being like, I don't know. Like at that time I was kind of like, you know, I'd just come out of Violet Grey and I was very into that. And I was like, Make's kind of doesn't look modern anymore and this and that or whatever. And I remember, I was like, yeah, I'll think about it. And then I go to dinner and I remember texting Ben at like 10 PM and I'm like, I was like, what am I thinking? Like, of course I want to do this. Like this just doesn't happen in this way for creative directors. Like it just, the I was like, duh.
Like, what am I doing passing up this huge opportunity? So it was less about like having this idea of I want my own brand and how do I decide whether I take over an existing one or making my own? It was you again, chasing that curiosity. This opportunity came up and you were like, of course, this is where I'm meant to be, and just kind of trusting the process.
Yeah. And I felt like I trusted Ben a lot, and I always knew that I wanted a business partner because my dad, he had his own business and he had a business partner who was his best friend. I mean, he was like my family, and I always knew that that's what I wanted. I didn't want to necessarily do it alone. It's just not the way that I work.
Yeah.
And I had trusted Ben, and we became friends, which was super important to me. And then, you know, I think my true strength is taking something and evolving it or sort of making it better. And if I think back about the things that I've done best, you know, I've taken something and helped move it along and evolved it. And, you know, I really feel like that was my strength as an art director, is to elevate something and really like, you know, move it forward. And that was exciting for me about an existing brand, because there was enough there, especially for people in beauty who knew about Make. They were like, oh yeah. And those people who knew like loved Make. And I loved Make too. And I remember when it launched, and I remember when Ben brought it up, I was like, that brand never really like got its full chance. You know, it kind of got, my perception was that it kind of got lost in the mix of the Glossiers and all the brands that sort of followed. And, you know, there was a lot of other things happening too with the founder at the time. And I just was like, there's enough there that we can give it, you know, like a new life and have a 2.0 version. And, you know, I sort of got both in that way, because I got to keep the brand recognition. You know, we changed everything but the logo, but that logo is really recognizable. And then we also got to like build a lot from scratch. You know, it was amazing to be able to have like sort of the really, you know, meaty parts of Make and build off of that and create like our own thing. So I kind of got both, I think.
How did you make those decisions where Make kind of had its own cult following? Were you scared to divert too far away from the original essence of Make and lose that customer base while also making sure you modernized it and made new customers want to jump on and kind of take it to that 2.0 level?
I think I was nervous that people were going to miss. I think a lot of people thought I was going to take it over and just continue it on as it was. And I was nervous that people were going to be upset about certain products that, you know, we're not remaking. But I also just really, once we had defined, we spent a lot of the first months really figuring out Make's North Star and what the real like driver behind everything was. And once we figured that out, I was like, people are gonna love this. Like, I felt really confident about what we were doing because it made a lot of sense and it felt right. I don't have any other way to explain it, but it felt right. And then I started testing product and trying our formulas, and I was like,
we got this. What is that North Star for Make? Like, what is that purpose?
So for Make, it's, you know, our tagline is look forward. And with everything that we do, we try to be forward looking. So that means using technology like biotech, you know, for ingredients and formulation, utilizing like newer methods for formulating or for, you know, using different packaging, and just sort of always thinking about, like, sometimes when we're trying to think of, you know, products that we would want, or like what would you use on your space station, which, you know, is funny and more of a joke, but it's like, what is the next thing? And that was really something that I was already thinking about before Make, where I was like, all right, we just had the last decade of a completely revolutionized beauty industry. Like, what's next? We sort of, from my perspective, and I'm a little jaded, but I was like, all right, we did this thing. So what's the next thing? you know, and once we sort of, it's like everything we think about, it's like, okay, is it a little bit, it's like in the future, but it feels attainable. It's mm-hmm. familiar, but it also feels new. And, you know, sci-fi is that way. And visually we're very, inspired by sci-fi movies, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like with the technology of the labs that we use, and also this sort of visual reference to future looking, yeah. that's kind of our North Star. Is like when we're formulating product or we're using product, it's like, does this feel forward? Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now I'm noticing this a lot with cosmetics because there's a lot of makeup out there and it's hard to know, you know, is it going to be powder or gel? Is it going to be liquid or matte? It's like, okay, well, what's a format that feels new, but maybe includes both of those things. Mm-hmm. So we had a really aggressive sort of product schedule for cosmetics next year. And we had to take some things off, and it was easy to do because we were like, that doesn't feel forward.
Yeah.
You know, so that really helps us make decisions, which was hard for me in the beginning because I'm like, the options are endless. I don't know.
I really like that correlation to sci-fi because I think a lot of times sci-fi can feel like doom and gloom of a negative future. And I think a lot of the world right now kind of feels depressing and negative when we think about the climate and what's to come for our future. So I really like that positive spin on it's a little out of reach and it feels a little crazy and unique and different, but it also feels obtainable. And it also, when you watch sci-fi, you can understand it. You can put yourself in those people's shoes and it does feel realistic in a way.
Yeah.
So I really like that essence of like, it's new and it's fresh, but it's exciting and it's a little out of reach, but it's still obtainable. I think that's such a fun combination.
Yeah. I think now more than ever too, those sci-fi movies feel real because of climate, you know, and overpopulation, and you know, we're starting to travel into space. And I was watching a lot of sci-fi movies for, I liked them anyway, but I was watching them for visual reference. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that there's always nostalgia integrated into sci-fi because it's about making a choice to let go of what you know and try something different.
Yeah.
Because you know that that's the better thing, or it's like better for the planet or better for society, or, you know, but you have to let go of your old ways too, or, you know, leaving Earth, for example. Like there's a nostalgia and there's like a letting go of to go to this new chapter. And when I was making the launch campaign video, it was sort of like, I was thinking about that, where you just like let go of what you know. And, you know, I was also like being sort of a fembot and hypnotizing you, but you know, like let go of what you know, and here's something different. Here's like the next phase of this thing. So
yeah, very in line with your personal journey right now, kind of letting go what you don't know and accepting.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yes.
I know. We just had a little mini therapy session there. I want to like zoom in on your face in that moment, the like epiphany you just had. So I know that sustainability is really important to yourself and Make as a company. How are you making sure that that's a focus in this new future you guys are creating?
Yeah. And sustainability is really challenging, I think, because it's like clean, it's very subjective and it's an imperfect system. Mm-hmm. I fully accept the fact that if you create a consumer brand, you are ultimately creating waste, and there is no way to be 100% sustainable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that might not be true in the future, but for right now, that's just the reality. And I think when I was thinking about what a brand's responsibility is, you know, a new brand or brands who are, you know, big brands, I was like, we all have a responsibility to do the best that we can mm-hmm. for sustainability. And as a business owner, it's very hard to balance. You know, ultimately we're a business, and you have to make a lot of decisions about, should I use this certain type of plastic because it helps my margin, or do I choose this glass thing because it's, you know, better for the environment, it's completely recyclable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Make is going to, we're moving to glass, and a lot of the components now for next year are glass. But, you know, it's challenging to really like do it 100% right. And I think for me, I want to do the best that we can in terms of packaging and the things that we are physically creating, but also this concept of Lenny, which is the lab engineered natural ingredients. To me, that's another sort of approach to sustainability that I don't know that a lot of people have thought about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my brother is a farmer. And so I'm very interested in, you know, he's taught me a lot about soil and why that's important. And I obviously like feel very, and living in LA, I feel very connected to how important farming is to the climate, mm-hmm. to the health of the earth, to the health of, you know, us. And with Lenny, we're able to like really lower our impact on the earth in that way. You know, harvesting natural ingredients is extremely hard on the earth and the biodiversity. And with biotech and technology, you're able to create natural ingredients in a lab, and they are biologically the same. You know, lab engineered ingredients are more stable. You can make as much as you need. You're taking one orchid instead of an entire field. You're taking what you need, cloning it, and, you know, it just has such a less impact on the earth, you know, and also using, you know, upcycled ingredients that would otherwise be waste. That feels like an easy one to me. Mm-hmm. And also cold pressing, using sort of methods of formulation and manufacturing that are very low energy. So that Lenny to me feels like, you know, of course we have recycled plastic, have recycled boxes, you know, do the best that we can with the packaging. But really, I think that our stance on sustainability comes from our ingredients and our formulation. And that's where I see us make the biggest impact.
And to me, that feels way more genuine than, I think a lot of brands are being forced to kind of do performative mm-hmm. work when it comes to sustainability, because as consumers, a lot of us don't know. We don't know what's right. We don't have the answers. And I think the future of beauty brands and just brands in general is education and helping mm-hmm. to be transparent and educate the consumers, because like natural is such a big buzzword, and people don't realize the correlation that we are ruining the environment to get these natural products, which we don't need to. We can grow them in a lab. They're just as good. They're better because they're controlled, like you said. And we're not harming the planet. And I feel like I spent a lot of time kind of just being a know-it-all and being like, no, it has to be clean and it has to be this and that. And like, if there's plastic in it, it's awful. And then you research stuff and you hear like why we can't just immediately stop using plastic, and that it's mm-hmm. a bigger thing than I think. Everything's bigger than we want to think it is. We want to think everything's black and white and easy to control and easy to fix. And that's just not the case. Like, I'm vegan and I will get a lot of flack for, I will eat eggs if they're from a local farm where the chickens aren't harmed. And I feel like people are so much more concerned with appearance than their actual ethics and morals.
Yeah.
And like there's a brand that I might work with, and they use collagen from a fish that's already been farmed and already going to be consumed, but they take the scales that would in other world be wasted, and they use it for the collagen. And I think that's so much more powerful and sustainable to use. If you're going to consume an animal, use every piece of that animal. Don't let it go to waste.
Yeah.
And that's more of a priority to me, but I know I'm going to have people give me backlash and be like, you're not a real vegan. Like,
yeah.
Who gets to make that up? Who's deciding that? Like, people get so mad when I call myself a vegan and I'm like, yep, I had an egg for breakfast today. And I'm like, but I'm going to call myself a vegan and you can't change that. So you can call me whatever you want.
Right. Yeah. I know there's such like a rigidity to things, and it's like, I had this conversation yesterday too about the internet and how in a lot of ways, there's not really much you can say without somebody calling you out, and just the intensity of that part of the internet is fine and very powerful for social justice, for real, real big issues. But, we were talking about Dave Chappelle and his Netflix thing. And it's like, people are so quick to latch onto what he's saying, but I don't know that people are really listening because they just want to get behind, I want to do it right. So I want to make sure I'm like doing the right thing.
Everyone's you know? So scared to get called out that they're like, I'm going to call you out first because then I'm on the right side. And they don't take time to listen and understand and hear. And like, I actually almost posted on my Instagram story today and then deleted it. Did I send it to close friends? No. I was going to say, like, let's normalize not sharing our two cents on everything.
Everything.
You don't need to. Like, we don't have to say every word that pops into our head. And social media has made this a thing. But also, like, I think TikTok has just exacerbated that. People comment to get likes on their comment. And like, I feel like it's turned everyone into the class clown where people are just like disrupting for attention. Like you're not helping anything and you're not doing anything. And the more you talk about doing good and the more like you share about make being sustainable, the more people are going to try to nitpick you and pull you apart. Yeah. The more you speak up about one injustice, the more people are criticizing you for not speaking up about another. It's like, the more good you try to do, the more stones are thrown your way. And you just got to keep doing what you think's right and trying to educate people and let them learn on their own journey.
Yeah, it's starting, which I anticipated it. I just think that's a part of my job. And the thing that is, I think, upsetting to me is that, and this is why I say sustainability is imperfect, because if you own a brand, there is no perfect way to do it. Mm-hmm. And we all have a responsibility to do our best and evolve with technology and genuinely do the best that we can. And, you know, if you have a problem with something, have a conversation with me about it. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of people that are just so quick to say, like, to talk shit, to be like, you know, performative, but all you're doing, you're not actually like making any difference. You're just like adding to this negative cycle that, you know, if you have a problem and you want to talk to me about it, let's talk about it, because I probably don't disagree with you either, which is the thing. It's like, but I am doing the best that I can. Make does the best that I can, and it's not perfect, and I know that, but no consumer product brand is perfect.
Mm-hmm. You're acknowledging that. And I think that is the biggest thing to me. It's like, any brand could just be like, oh yeah, we do all these great things and do the three things people know and care about, but you're going, we're not perfect. Of course we leave an impact on the planet, like as does every human, but we are acknowledging that, we're working on that, and we are going to stay on top of science and stay ahead of it, because that's our whole brand motto. And I love that. Yeah. I value transparency and self-awareness above anyone being perfect. And I'm doing air quotes for anyone just listening and not watching. Like, it's just so much more powerful. And I totally agree with having the conversations. We're so afraid to like, just be like, hey, I thought this was an interesting choice. I didn't quite understand it. I'd love to talk about it. Instead, people just want to comment mean things, which is going to put people on the defense. No one's going to respond to that well. If anything, I'm going to like keep doing that action despite you, because now I'm pissed off that you're being mean to me. If you DM me on Instagram and you are upset about something, I'm going to talk to you. And like you said, I'm probably going to agree with you and be like, you know what? Let's work on that. Let's talk about this.
No one can make mistakes. That's really how it feels. And it's, you know, that's the only way that people learn is by making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And You know, we were talking about this yesterday too, about how DaBaby got canceled so quickly for what he said, which I 1000% think is terrible mm-hmm. and so ignorant. But he also like murdered somebody, and we're not talking about that. You know, it's like,
yeah. Yeah. The individuals who are making these mistakes and getting canceled are perpetuating the problem, but they're not the problem. Like, there's a deeper yeah. rooted problem that we have in this country with hating so many different groups of people who aren't like ourselves. And I think if we just cancel anyone who says anything that shows that, we don't fix the problem at all. I yeah. actually did a solo episode of the podcast, and I was talking about, do you remember the Hannah Brown situation, the girl from The Bachelor, when she sang the N-word on a live Instagram?
No.
Well, good. You don't keep up with The Bachelor. I do. I was like thinking about it, and I'm like, I'm glad how that all panned out, because she is like, I think she's from Alabama, and I'm sure she's around a lot of people who did not understand the validity in singing that word and how it was so inappropriate. And I'm sure she's done it a lot of times off camera. Like, that wasn't the first time I'm sure she's done it, but because she got caught doing it, and then the way she handled it and did the work and then shared that work with her audience, that was so much more impactful, because instead of just being like, oh shoot, I'm canceled. And then a lot of people were jumping on to defend her. Like, a lot of these white women were just like, no, it's not that big of a deal, who don't have the right to say it's not a big deal, because it's not to them. But instead of doing that, her like sharing her story and sharing her growth and sharing like her upbringing and what led her to making those decisions, not as an excuse, but just like, there's a deeper rooted issue here, I think was so powerful and a lot stronger than just like, let's just cancel everyone who makes a mistake, because then those mistakes are just going to keep happening, or people are going to just hide their mistakes better. Yeah. And there's no progress in that.
Yeah. And the internet can ruin somebody so quickly, and so quickly. Not that some people don't deserve it, you know, but where's the, just like we're saying, where's the actual change? Where's the progress? If you can't allow that person to understand why that's not okay and to learn from it and move on. Like, someone's life does not need to be completely over because they made a mistake. You know, if they didn't physically harm somebody, or, you know, just this girl, how would she know otherwise? There's so much context, you know, and it's like, there's always so much nuance and context that we don't get a chance to talk about. So
totally.
Yeah, the internet.
It's crazy. But I do feel kind of like a shift coming. And I think people are starting to realize, I hope so too, like, what is the goal here? I think. And that's that's my call to action. And that's what my call to action on the solo podcast was as well, if anyone didn't listen, is, what is your goal? When you write a comment to somebody, when you speak up about something, what are you trying to achieve here? Are you trying to invoke change and growth and a better world and a more equal world? Or are you just trying to like appear like you are woke and care? Or are you just trying to get this person to have a miserable life because they made a mistake? Like, I think we are forgetting intention, and a lot of the things we do are lacking intention, and we're doing it because everyone's doing it rather than really, really wanting to do the work and make a change. And I hope that shifts. I think it's great that people are caring so much and wanting to make a better world and make a more equal world. But now that you care and you're awake and you're aware of these injustices, what are you going to do about it? Not just share a meme, not share an infograph, not be a troll on the internet. What are you actually doing to make our world better? And I'm hoping we're going that route. We'll see.
I do too. I hope it's just sort of like a, you know, cracking the egg and everything at once, the floodgates, and that it can sort of find some ebb and flow and some balance, and that people understand, like, you have a responsibility to, like, you're responsible for what you say and what you do. And maybe it feels anonymous on the internet, but I ultimately don't think that it doesn't stay that way.
I know job interviews someday are going to be like, so we found your burner account and we have 5,000 troll comments that you left to different people. Let's talk about it. Be like, oh,
your
shoot.
Burner account. I love that.
Everyone. So it's funny. Like a no, any mean person, it's like no identity or like contradicting what they say. It's a mess. But I do think we're gonna get to a better place. I feel it coming. I hope it's coming. I think it comes with age too. Like,
yeah,
I always say that I used to be so open-minded that I was closed-minded to anyone mm-hmm. who wasn't open-minded in the way I was open-minded, which is like just as bad. Like, but you know, we all are on our own path. Yeah. I think most people are. And I think it's the journey that you go on. And I hope everyone listening takes a second to think about how they invoke change and if they're really doing it.
Yes. Let's look at that.
Well, before we end, do you have any advice for any entrepreneurs or anyone who's just like searching for their curiosity or purpose in life?
I think try a lot of different things. You know, the only way you're going to really find what it is that you like or what you really want to do is, I think, identifying what you don't like or what mm-hmm. you don't want to do. And you only know that by trying it, really.
Yeah.
So I think that, and also just like continue to show up and do the work. I mean, I even sort of struggle with this a little bit, this sense of entitlement. And I don't know if it's like my generation or just like my ego or whatever it is, but like, no matter what, you always have to do the work. And it, you know, you just have to do it and keep doing it and just keep showing up and try to learn as much as you can and ask questions. That's what I would say.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Gary. Can you let everyone know where they can continue to follow along your journey and where they can follow along with Make Beauty?
Yeah. Make's Instagram is Make Beauty Official and mine is Carrie_Barber on Instagram. I only have Instagram because that's enough.
Yeah, it is. It's plenty.
Good for me.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see where you take Make in the future. I've been loving the products so much.
Good.
You're really wonderful. And I'm really excited for the future of beauty when it's in your hands. So
thanks, Cammie.
Thank you all for listening and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.